Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. This special edition celebrates Ohio Goes to the Movies, a signature event of America 250 Ohio. Co-produced by John DeSando and Mary Urena and hosted by Mary Urena, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
I'm your host, Mary Urena.
And I'm David Weaver.
And this is Double Take. David, welcome back to the show.
It is a pleasure to be back. I had such a great time the last time and thrilled to be back with you and review another classic film with an Ohio connection.
Absolutely. And this one's in your wheelhouse because
yes.
It's an opera.
Yes.
And modern interpretation of an opera. Can you tell us a little bit about 1954's Carmen Jones?
Yes, Carmen Jones, 1954, 20th Century Fox, produced and directed by Otto Preminger, and The Ohio Connection, Dorothy Dandridge of Cleveland, who stars in the title role. This is an updating, and as you mentioned, opera is my background. I actually sang in the opera Carmen in 1981 in the chorus, not a role, but it was great fun. And it is one of the classics of the stage. It's probably one of the most produced operas in the world by Georges Bizet, a French composer. And 70 years after the original premiere, Oscar Hammerstein II, whom we equate mostly with his work with Richard Rodgers,
absolutely,
updated the book and wrote English lyrics to bring Carmen up into the modern show Carmen Jones.
Right, and it takes place during World War II at a parachute factory. But the main characters all remain the same. The setting is different.
The main characters all remain the same, you know, except Carmen, not being a cigarette girl, works in the parachute factory. Don José and the opera is Joe. He is a soldier, as he was in the original Carmen. And you have all of the interesting characters. You know, Joe actually has a girlfriend and a fiance, Cindy Lou, she's called.
From his hometown.
Yes. And he's actually, as the action starts, he is ready. Cindy Lou is coming to visit him at his base because he's getting ready to be promoted. He's getting to go to fly school and become a pilot, which is his dream. He's thrown a curve, though, by his Sergeant Brown, played by the wonderful Brock Peters, who people know from several other films, including To Kill a Mockingbird. Instead of being able to go off with Cindy Lou, he is charged with taking Carmen to jail after she gets into a fight with one of the other girls
workers
in the parachute factory. So
yeah,
a whole series of events happen, and
he succumbs to her over.
She's very sultry and seductive, beautiful. Cindy Lou is very sweet and prim and proper, so obviously he should have stayed with Cindy Lou.
He probably should have. And the story unfolds, as most operas do, with a love triangle and tragedy. Somebody
yes.
always dies at the end. That remains true. But I understand that the stage version, which premiered in 1943 in all black cast, quite a big hit, was significantly changed because Otto Preminger backed to the original source material and really made it more operatic. So
yes.
we have this beautiful star in Dorothy Dandridge. This really made her more of a star than she already was
yes.
at the time. We have Harry Belafonte playing Joe, who becomes obsessed to the point of the tragic ending, not giving anything away.
Yes.
And, you know, we have the wonderful Brock Peters. We have Pearl Bailey in a supporting role as a friend of Carmen. We have Diane Carroll, I believe, in her first film
yes.
role as also a friend of Carmen. We have Roy Glenn, who I recognized immediately from Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, who when he played Sidney Poitier's father. So it's just a wonderful cast, talented actors and even talented singers, and yet only Pearl Bailey and Diane Carroll and Olga James, who played Cindy Lou, actually sang their parts.
Yes.
Everyone else was dubbed.
Well, and that was because Otto Preminger wanted those. If you're going to use the music of Carmen, you have to have the voices for Carmen. As we were saying, even though Dorothy Dandridge, Harry Belafonte, well known as singers, but they're not opera singers. And so Marilyn Horne at that time, 20 years old, very young, would go on in later years to have one of the stellar careers on the operatic stage. Interestingly, being the most renowned Carmen at the Metropolitan Opera, you know, in the 1970s, she dubs the voice for Carmen. Harry Belafonte, who we all know is one of the great singers, you know, introduced the genre of calypso right around this same time. Laverne Hutcherson dubs the voice for him because he is an honest-to-God opera singer. And it's an interesting thing, and you and I were chatting about this beforehand, about the fact of how closely Dorothy Dandridge and Marilyn Horne actually worked together.
Yes. It was very interesting. Marilyn, in an interview, shared that she worked with Dorothy for months to get her intonation and octave range so that when she sang the part for her, she sang it as she thought Dorothy would sound if she were an opera singer. And I have to admit, when I was watching the film, oftentimes back in the 1950s and beforehand, the singers were singing to a soundtrack anyway. Yeah. But I really thought it was Dorothy's voice in the role of Carmen. It wasn't until Harry Belafonte had his...
The flower song.
Where I'm like, that doesn't seem as smooth and as right, and that voice doesn't really sound like it would come out of Harry Belafonte. And I was right.
Yes. Dorothy Dandridge and Marilyn Horne were seamless.
Absolutely.
In that transition. So that was very believable. And of course, I think that how well she did that part, again, is one of the reasons why she was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Actress. I mean, not the first Black performer to be nominated for an Oscar, but the first in the leading role. And so she just totally took over that part. Also, in everything we've mentioned, Otto Preminger, being familiar with Dorothy Dandridge as this kind of like sweet, sultry nightclub singer, chanteuse, really. And everything, did not see her at Carmen
at all. And she had, the year prior to this, had her first starring role in a film called Bright Road, where she played a prim and proper teacher. So that also contributed to the image that Otto Preminger had of her, and why he wasn't convinced at first that she was his Carmen. But she came back, had done herself over to sell herself as that sultry seductress, and
yes,
got the part.
And did it so well that she and Otto Preminger became an item.
For 4 years, that's true.
Apparently,
that's
and everything.
True.
And I always thought that was very fascinating because obviously they had a tempestuous affair that resulted originally from this movie thing that ended, but then 5 years later they worked together again in Porgy and Bess.
Yeah, go figure. I guess they were friends.
Yes.
So this film is historic and notable for a lot of reasons. You mentioned that Dorothy Dandridge was the first woman of color to be nominated in a lead actress role for Best Actress. It also received Golden Globe nominations for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. And an award that they gave at the time was Most Promising Newcomer, Male, which actually was won by Joe Adams, who played the boxer, love interest that takes her,
yes,
Carmen away from Joe, Husky Miller, and he was the first person of color to win a Golden Globe in an acting role.
Very fascinating.
Which is, so this had a lot of firsts. Interesting, mm-hmm, side note about Joe Adams. He was a disc jockey and actor and did lots of things, but he also was Ray Charles's manager.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, so, I had to very interesting because I don't recall seeing him in any of the other films, whereas people like Roy Glenn, Brock Peters, you saw them a lot of other films.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about this before. Despite the success of this film, I mean, Dorothy Dandridge ended up being the first woman of color on Life magazine's cover, all the different nominations and awards. It was even nominated for Palme d'Or after opening the Cannes Film Festival in 1955. Interestingly, it wasn't able to air or be shown outside of Cannes in France until 1981 because of copyright laws on order of the estate of the composer Georges Bizet.
Yes.
Who wrote the original opera. So they couldn't even see it in France,
yes,
for quite some time. And it also has been selected for preservation by the United States National Film Registry. So it's a very culturally significant film, lots of success. But unfortunately, the actors, it was an all-Black cast, did not get to reap the true benefits of that. They didn't get contracts with the studios to guarantee them an income or roles. They pretty much had to go back to what they were doing before. We talked about Joe Adams was a disc jockey. Mm. Dorothy Dandridge was a nightclub and music review singer, as was Diane Carroll and Pearl Bailey and Harry Belafonte. There were still those strong reminders of the segregated system that existed in Hollywood and that they didn't get to reap the benefits of their stardom or the success of their film.
I always thought one of the fascinating things about Harry Belafonte, again, after making this film, and then in the late 50s, he created his own production company, Harbell, and did several very fine films that were dramas. But by that point, he had really grown through his music and stage performance, television specials. So to have a lot more clout than the average black performer would have at that time. And he used it.
Thankfully.
Yes.
Thankfully, because certainly others followed suit and stand on his shoulders. And luckily, it was at a time where the studios had seen its heyday. The creative artists behind making the film started gaining more power. But kudos to him, and kudos to Otto Preminger and the entire cast for making this film. As I've shared with you, I'm not an opera fan.
Yes.
But given the historical significance of this film, I'm glad I saw it once.
We have to give props to Otto Preminger, because he was definitely a guy who was not afraid of pushing the envelope. And we've talked about, The Moon is Blue, where he even dared to release a film that did not have the seal of approval or whatever it was.
Oh, from the Hays Code.
He didn't care. And the film was a success regardless, and perhaps, helped change the tide that came. And then, of course, later on, would hire Dalton Trumbo out of exile and everything to write the screenplay for Exodus. So
we're going to talk more about Dorothy Dandridge, the star of this film, Ohio born. But before we get there, what's your thoughts about Carmen Jones?
Well, Carmen Jones, I would definitely recommend to be seen. It is a wonderful show, obviously, for anyone that loves opera, as I do. You will recognize all of the fantastic they keep in every great song, fantastic performances, a really watershed movement, movies and in musicals.
Well said. I hope our audience will seek it out. And we want to talk a little bit more about the life of Dorothy Dandridge. As we've referenced, she was born in Cleveland, Ohio in 1922. And she had kind of a non-traditional childhood, I would almost say a rough childhood. Her mother actually left her husband before she was even born, left her father before she was even born. And basically, with her older sister, her mother trained them to do a song and dance routine, and they were known as the Wonder Children. And they traveled around the southern states on what was called the Chitlin Circuit doing shows. That's how she spent her early childhood.
One of those child performers, like her good friend Judy Garland, who were with her sisters, very important to the livelihood of their
family. Right. So she didn't have much of what we would consider a traditional childhood. In fact, it wasn't until the Depression hit in 1930 when the mother and two daughters moved to Hollywood, where her mother, Ruby, actually got sustainable work in radio and film, mostly small parts, but it was consistent and enough to sustain them. And although they were still performing under their new name, the Dandridge Sisters, this is probably the first time that Dorothy actually goes to school and goes to junior high and high school and garners an education. But she continues to perform. In fact, her first screen appearance is in the 1935 film musical comedy Mississippi. She was 12, and she starred as one of the cabin kids in the Bing Crosby and W.C. Fields film. She's still in that world, still in that business, still singing. 5 years later, she actually had her first credited film role in Four Shall Die in 1940. She just continued to work. She became famous, actually, through what were called soundies.
Yeah.
She made these three-minute films that were mostly songs. You would put a coin in a machine and watch it, and she became one of the top stars in that genre of films at the time. You can actually see some on YouTube if you want to do a search for that. And it's kind of fascinating because it's from that different realm
that we never think about. It preserves a record of her, this very developmental. She's a seasoned performer, but still very young.
Beautiful, beautiful voice. She wasn't an opera singer, as we established, but she was a very good singer. Beautiful to look at and a really good actress. We mentioned her first starring role was as Jane Richards in 1953's Bright Rose. Road opposite Harry Belafonte, which became a theme in her career. But it was really the success of Carmen Jones that elevated her to the stature that we think of her today.
I seem to recall one night I was watching Turner Classic Movies, and they did a Dorothy Dandridge thing, and they actually showed Bright Road and Carmen Jones back to back in it. So, and the films were right after each other. So
yes, they
it's very interesting again to see the total difference in the character that she played, Brightwood, and Carmen Jones.
Absolutely. And she worked really hard, one, to get that role, but she also worked really hard to not take stereotypical roles. She always tried to look for the strength and dignity of a character. She was criticized on occasion for certain roles that she took, but she actually left Hollywood to make films that didn't have restrictions on interracial relationships. She made a really good film called Moment of Danger. That was the title of when it was released in this country in 1960. And it's a low-budget British thriller with Trevor Howard and Edmund Purdom as her co-stars. And they're in this double or triple crossing, if you will, triangle of jewel thieves. She played an equal part there, but also has on-screen hug or kiss or something with one of her co-stars. There was also the role she took in Tamango in 1958, which focuses on a slave ship revolt. Given the subject matter, when Black artists were trying to rise out of that slavery narrative, she took some criticism for taking that role.
Yes.
But by the same token, this was about a revolt. And she had enough star power at that time to be able to negotiate the fact her character wasn't going to swim naked in the ocean to escape, and she didn't have to wear a bikini made out of rags for the entirety of the film. So she did fight for what she believed was right for not only herself and her character, but also the image of the Black community in what was often a white-controlled narrative and white-controlled industry. So kudos to her for that. She did have a tragic life, had two unhappy marriages. She had a special needs daughter who ultimately ended up being institutionalized. She also had financial issues related to embezzlement by the advisors who were supposed to be taking care of her money. Sadly, we don't have a large body of her work because she died at the age of 42 of somewhat murky circumstances. There are different theories as to how she died. If you look back at not only Carmen Jones and Bright Road, which you got to see as a double bill.
Yes.
But also Tamango, Porgy and Bess. She received a Golden Globe nomination for her role as Bess. And then the film I mentioned, Moment of Danger, you really get to see an incredibly talented woman whose career, unfortunately, was too short.
Well, one of the fortunate things she did have, she could always fall back on her singing. Anytime in films or anything, you know, I mean, because she had such wonderful stage presence. She was beautiful. I was watching again a clip last night of her on the Ed Sullivan Show in the early 1960s, and still beautiful, still wonderful singer. So that was at least a good thing for her that she could always go back into singing and perform, because she was a huge name.
Yes, she still has a legacy today. She remains a cultural icon. She's been referenced in other films and television shows. Most notably, the character of Wesley Snipes wants to play her in a biopic in Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
She's someone who made such few films today, she has so many biographies, you know, I said.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the mystery of her, is the what might have been, and that she had this somewhat tragic life and untraditional upbringing, and yet she had this immense talent. The culmination was in 1999 when Halle Berry produced and starred in the movie Introducing Dorothy Dandridge, and Halle received numerous accolades for this role. When she won the Academy Award for Monsters Ball for Best Actress, she specifically dedicated the moment to Dorothy Dandridge and other Black actresses upon whose shoulders she stood. An interesting fact, it was meant to be in the cosmic universe that Dorothy Dandridge and Halle Berry not only were both from Cleveland, Ohio, they were both born at the same hospital. How weird is that?
Amazing. Yes.
Amazing.
Quite a few years apart.
Quite a few years, but fate brought them back together.
Yes.
And thank you for joining me for this discussion about Carmen Jones.
It's been a pleasure. Definitely, as I would say, film that film lovers should see, especially if you love musicals, especially if you love opera. If you love seeing one of the true, I think, you know, great icons of the screen, few films even though she made, Dorothy Dandridge.
Absolutely. So. And a daughter of Ohio and one about whom I think we can be very proud.
Yes.
So thank you again for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mary.